Hello and welcome to ADHD Mums. In this podcast, we tackle the tough, often unspoken realities of motherhood, neurodiversity, and mental health. So you're sitting in the car park of an assessment clinic. The engine is off, your hands are on the steering wheel. Your heart is going fast and you're supposed to be bringing in your school reports. You've got them in your bag, which is a small miracle, but you've read them 100 times. It says conscientious, perfectionist, pleasure to have in the class, wish I had more like her. All the words that were meant to prove everything was fine. But this was also the period where you were full of anxiety, you had an eating disorder, but there's no box for that on the report card, is there? It didn't disrupt anyone else enough to matter, so it didn't count. You can't take those report cards in, can you? Because you know that if you do, you won't be diagnosed with ADHD and you'll be denied medication. So you're staring at the car door, wondering if you should just say that you lost them, or joke about some kind of house fire, or just not mention them. Anything to avoid handing over the neat paper evidence that you were functional. And then you wonder, do other people sit in car parks rehearsing excuses for school reports? Because your brain has opened a full internal investigation and then you start listing the evidence against yourself. You have good school reports. You work. You have kids. You might have a partner or you had a partner. You have people that rely on you. You even have some people that say, I don't know how you do it. And then the minimizing kicks in. Fast, automatic, and familiar. Other mums have it worse. I should just try harder. This constant, quiet feeling of dying inside. That's probably normal, right? Like other people feel like that too. Or maybe they just cope better. Other people walk into appointments fairly neutral, but you might walk in with a full evidence file about why you should try harder. And then either from someone else or from inside your own head, you hear it. Everyone says they have ADHD now, don't they? And then you feel instantly embarrassed, like you've been exaggerating something that was untrue. All of this evidence that women and mums don't really have ADHD and we need to try harder or that's normal or that's mum life, that's not proof that we're wrong. It's proof that the system taught us that it's our fault. And this is the ADHD myth as it actually lands. Am I buying into this ADHD thing because a lot of other mums are getting diagnosed now? It shows up when you notice how many women your age are suddenly saying the same thing out loud. It shows up when you see the wait list, the assessment clinics, the conversations everywhere, the media. And you start wondering if you're mistaking recognition for something that's not relevant to you. Because from where you're standing, it doesn't feel dramatic enough. Because we often minimize, don't we? You might think to yourself, I function, I work, I parent. Maybe this is just a trend. Maybe I'm jumping on a label that explains too much. Maybe it's just my personality. And it doesn't feel cruel when you're asking yourself those questions. It feels sensible, responsible, the kind of explanations that make professionals nod. And you start editing yourself mid-sentence as you talk to them in the assessment, and that's when the internal audit starts. Other people have it worse. I've managed this long. I should cope better. However, neurotypical people, I don't believe, interrogate themselves this hard before asking for help. But when the dominant story is that ADHD is everywhere now, doubt feels safer than the belief that you might actually need help. And embarrassment for being there might feel more appropriate than relief. So the myth doesn't just circulate externally, it actually installs itself in us. This doesn't just start in your 30s. That's just when it finally breaks cover and it comes out into the light. For a lot of ADHDers, childhood is where vigilance gets trained. And that's not a personality trait. That often is a compensation for their undiagnosed ADHD. For a lot of ADHD kids, praise isn't random and neither is acceptance. And it shows up in such specific moments when she's being helpful or considerate or easy to manage, when she remembers her homework, when she tidies up without being asked, when she looks after other kids, when she notices what the teacher needs before anyone else does. And that's when the feedback comes. You're such a good girl. You're so mature for your age. I wish I had more kids like you. But when her executive function drops for a moment, when she interrupts, talks too much, forgets the plan, misreads the moment, gets loud or silly at the wrong time, the responses around her shift, correction, side eyes, social withdrawal, adults speaking to her firmly, and she feels it immediately. And this is where gender does matter. Because as a mum of 3 kids, I have 2 boys and 1 girl. One boy and 1 girl really represent more of that ADHD internalizing pattern, and my other boy is more externalizing. So I do understand that boys definitely do this as well. I'm going to use she just for ease because a lot of us women presented like this as kids. So the same behaviors, being silly, interrupting, talking too much, forgetting things, being loud or silly, whatever it is, those same behaviors in boys are often more tolerated, even expected by adults, particularly at school. Rough play, talking over others, blurting things out, being impulsive, forgetting homework. Sometimes in friendships, boy on boy, when one boy is impulsive or silly, they just move on, even if one child has wrecked the game. Boys will rupture and repair socially very quickly, without it costing them belonging necessarily. Let's say one kid keeps kicking the ball out at soccer, but the next break comes, he's still picked on the team. It is still hard for boys. I have two boys, I get it. But it is different when they're younger anyway. Girls do not get that same amount of grace. It is more about the moment, making a mistake, and then socially being outcast for the rest of the day. For girls, social acceptance is quieter and it is more conditional. It depends on timing, tone, emotional attunement. So when an ADHD girl misses a cue, interrupts, forgets something that mattered to the group, it doesn't get brushed off necessarily. It can create distance, especially if it's repeated over time and friends could stop inviting her. Conversations go flat. Sometimes she's, and I'm air quoting, too much, a bit weird, hard work, annoying. And so she learns quickly where does safety live. Approval comes from being useful. Belonging comes from being very careful. Connection depends on whether I'm disrupting the room or not, whether I'm being helpful. And she becomes that good girl when she remembers and quietly self-punishes herself when she doesn't. Because the system has taught her exactly how fragile acceptance can be. So over time, even when school isn't there or other adults aren't there, she then begins to self-edit and internally monitor herself and, of course, what is created, vigilance. And this feeling of always being on and the nervous system starts to get really tired real quick. Burnout, anxiety, depression. A lot of us ADHD mums started to feel like that very early on. I remember when I was first in therapy at 13 or 14, psychologists had only just discovered what depression was and no one could understand how a child presented with it. But by adulthood, vigilance feels like a personality for a lot of us. But was it really our personality in the beginning? Or did we grow up and learn that? I would argue we grew up and learned that. Because by adolescence, vigilance isn't just something that we do, it's who we are. And ADHD girls don't just miss time jokes. They might jump in a half beat too early. They might talk over someone without meaning to. They might forget plans that mattered to the group. And one thing I know I did as a teenager over and over again is share a secret because the impulse to connect with that person in that moment overrides the pause and understanding that I shouldn't share a secret. They send the text that they shouldn't send to the person that they shouldn't be seeking approval from. Because in that moment, connection feels like relief, but then it circulates, doesn't it? Screenshots, whispers, the tone shift the next day. No one explains it to the ADHD girl and they learn real fast. They learn to monitor themselves harder, to reread the messages before speaking, to drink because alcohol smooths, to drink because at the social edges, it slows the monitoring. It makes the timing feel easier until it doesn't. And by the time adolescence ends, social ease isn't instinctive. It hasn't necessarily been learned, but it's been managed real tight by hypervigilance. So when something ruptures socially, let's say there's conflict within the group, she gets real good at smoothing things over. She apologizes first, she overexplains, she anticipates the reactions before they happen, and the belief settles in quietly but real firmly, I'm responsible for keeping things okay between people. If we contrast a neurotypical teen for a moment, they might experiment, push boundaries, they might get annoyed with each other, but they recover quickly because it was a choice and they go back to what they were doing before. But an ADHD teen might learn that deviation from that, doing anything out of the ordinary, following an impulse costs more. And so the vigilance steps in really quickly. Lists, reminders, double checking. Competence becomes really important and there's a lot of effort to stay invisible. So people might start saying, you're so mature for your age, you're so responsible, I wish I had more kids like you. But no one asks what that costs. So if we fast forward into early adulthood for a moment, this doesn't change the role, it locks it in. Because a really common pairing can come here. And of course, relationships present in all different ways. I'm going to say she because most people are ADHD mums, but those gender terms can be used interchangeably because often the dynamic's the same. She brings vigilance. He brings ease. Not because she prefers vigilance, but because she knows exactly what vigilance buys her. She learned early that being organized, helpful, emotionally attuned to others around her and one step ahead is what earns her acceptance. And that being the good girl, the reliable one, the thoughtful one, the one that keeps things steady and safe is what is going to get her accepted. So she stretches that role again. She remembers birthdays, tracks bills, notices when things are off, holds the emotional weather of the relationship and apologizes first. Not because she enjoys it, but because she knows what will happen when she doesn't. And this might look like control. I've definitely been called controlling many times, but it's about protection because vigilance buffers against anything that might hurt us. It protects self-worth in the short term anyway, but it actually really erodes that long term. Because again, if we contrast a neurotypical woman, she might forget something and she might shrug, whereas an ADHD mum might forget something and replay it for a few days. Because forgetting has not just meant forgetting once, it means disappointment, correction, distance, failure, shame. So here's the part that I think people get wrong. This role is locked in well before children come along. Life works for ADHD mums because a lot of us track, not in an obvious dramatic way, but in a quiet background way that doesn't even register as a thing. Bills get paid on time, appointments don't get missed, social plans hold, work deadlines land, and relationships stay stable. But there is a psychology term for this, and it's called anticipatory cognition. It's a big two words, but what it actually is very simple. Her brain is already in before, during, and after. Nothing is waiting to become urgent. She's actioning things all the time. So it might look like nothing is happening, but when it all runs smoothly, it's called normal. But when something drops, it's called her lapse, her mistake. Do better. Something that I found really interesting is that attention is not actually neutral. So people do things or they attend to things if they think they will be blamed for the outcome. So for example, if an ADHD mum is concerned about Christmas not going well if she's hosting or whatever it is, she knows that's going to be on her. So she will smooth the outcome to make sure that it goes well. So she might do a lot of labor, a lot of work, a lot of hypervigilance in the lead up to that to make sure that goes well. And when the outcome is that it went well, it kind of like erases the labor that was creating it. So people would go, oh, that went well, as if it just happened, even though the ADHD mum was the one that created it just happening. And this is how the mental load will find a mum. Before kids, before anyone calls it that. So Ellie wrote in and said, this was right before kids. It was back when I thought I was a relaxed person. We were hosting a family Christmas. Nothing major, food, chairs, all fine. And everyone kept saying, oh, it'll be easy, you'll be fine, which in hindsight should have been her first red flag. But about 3 weeks out, she said she was lying in bed, doom scrolling, half asleep, and her brain did that thing where it sits bolt upright like, excuse me, no one has actually organized anything. No food plan, no timing. Her partner's mother had said, oh, we'll just see how the day goes. And his sister had said, I'll bring something, which was code for like a mystery salad or like a random dessert that will appear at some point with no planning. And everyone will be fine in a really loud way that people are right before they lose their shit and blame you. And so the next day, 3 weeks out, Ellie messaged the group chat. Hey, I'll do the main, but could you bring some salad or dessert? That'd be great. Then she had to follow up with everybody, clarify what they were bringing, checked allergies, adjusted times that other had to see other elements of the family and kids' preferences. And when she wrote, she said, I didn't say I'm going to be in the role of unpaid event coordinator, but that is what she had to do to get it moving. Then Christmas Day came. Everyone ate, no one starved. And his mum said, oh, that was so easy. And then her partner said, see, I told you to be fine. And it was fine. Nothing bad had happened. Which was kind of inconvenient for Ellie because it meant that no one noticed how much time and effort she had had to avoid a full disaster of no one having any food. And that night, Ellie said she was absolutely cooked. She was exhausted. And when her partner said, why are you so tired? We barely did anything. We sat around and ate and drank all day. She said that she felt really, really pissed off because what do you even say? And then Ellie said it was only listening to this podcast that made her think maybe it isn't her. maybe isn't her needing to relax more. And maybe she wasn't stupid for feeling annoyed. And maybe that day was part of what really gifted her the mental load of running her family. But what no one else noticed was that she's the one that organized it. She remembered everything. She felt the tension building in a situation that hadn't technically gone wrong yet, realized it, and got it sorted. So if you're an ADHD mum that has historically over time found that failure has kind of landed on you as your fault, your brain might simulate that ahead of time. However, if failure rarely lands on you, urgency signals kind of weaken and you're less likely to go and give what needs to be done attention. So the ADHD mum, Ellie, she might step in, she might follow up, she might remind, adjust, and fill the gap that would have been awkward, stressful, or costly later. She doesn't want to control it necessarily, but she knows what will happen if things slide. She's lived the fallout before, and she's learned that early action is going to prevent later shame or embarrassment. But because nothing broke on Christmas Day, right, no one saw the effort. Nothing went wrong. And so when things go smoothly, the labor that made them smooth kind of disappears or erases. It doesn't erase the absence of work. It means that the work landed early on someone that wasn't them. That's what that means. Over time, the system absorbs this as a given. She's good at this. Ellie's really organized. I'd love to have Ellie over for Christmas. She could host for me and my family. She's reliable. And so more of those tasks drift her way. More remembering, more anticipating, more things holding in a mind that technically belongs to no one until they fail. And then Ellie would find that the failure would come over to her. So for a lot of us ADHD women, we can't pinpoint the moment that the mental load and everything became our job, and we definitely didn't put our hand up. It wasn't discussed or chosen, but it accumulated because of our hypervigilance that we've had since children. So having a child doesn't create this role, but it exposes it, and then it puts a massive magnifying glass on what was already there. Task switching, future planning, emotional forecasting, vigilance. The number of things that cannot be allowed to fail increases real quick. And every ADHD has an executive function limit. And once that gets exceeded, they hit burnout. And so vigilance escalates to compensate for some of those limits being exceeded. So what used to be background monitoring becomes constant monitoring. Hypervigilance isn't a personality change here, but it's like a load management under high stakes because you've got children now. So mistakes don't just cost time or money or a little bit of embarrassment. They might cost judgment. They might threaten your identity as a good mother. So the brain does the most efficient thing that it knows how. It takes on more. Not because she wants control, but because she can't tolerate the risk of something essential not getting done. What if the baby runs out of formula? She's not going to wait and see if someone else is going to remember. She might go herself. Even if her baby cries the whole way there, the whole way around, vomits everywhere, and she could have asked somebody else, she will go herself. She might buy extra, order ahead, put reminders in her phone. From the outside, it looks like an outside preference, very organized. But from the inside, it's like a risk containment. And because this has already been the pattern, she's always stepped in early, always absorbed the drop, the system doesn't even push back on her. Her partner might have learned quietly and logically, if I miss this, it'll still get done. Like she's got more in the cupboard, right? Not because he doesn't care, but because historically in their relationship, that has been true. He hasn't actually had the responsibility of Christmas, for example, not going well, even though it's his family. It still became her responsibility. So splitting the load doesn't feel really urgent. Sharing responsibility doesn't get renegotiated necessarily. And the default of their relationship dynamic holds. She might take on more and more, not because she wants to, but because the cost of not doing it feels unbearable. The more she takes on, the more invisible she becomes. And she becomes the system's nervous system. So a neurotypical mum might get tired, yup. But an ADHD mum gets overloaded and then being blamed for being too much, too controlling or snapping or being unable to relax, when what is actually happening is that she's holding risk and anticipating that no one else is tracking. That is a system responding to stakes it cannot afford to drop. So from the outside, these lives might look similar. Two mums, kids, jobs, partners, schedules, dinner to get on the table. But this is where people stop looking. A neurotypical mum might move through their day fairly reactively. Something happens, she stops and responds. Then she recovers. Her executive function might be fairly consistent. Working memory holds. When something drops, it's a bit irritating, but it doesn't destabilize her. Whereas an ADHD mum might move through her day more proactively, not because she's anxious necessarily, although she might be, but because inconsistency might have trained her to. ADHD brains have variable executive function output every day. Some days it's there, sometimes it drops. So the brain adapts. It doesn't wait for failure. It scans ahead to prevent it. So when internal regulation, that's like you, your own internal compass, might be unreliable because your executive function is up and down, then your external monitoring will increase. So instead of responding to the problems reactively, you start to shift your effort to future planning and what could go wrong. You might start to pre-run it. What might go wrong here? Where will this fall apart? What will this cost me later? So the ADHD mum might be packing lunches the night before, not because she's super organized and wants to, but because she might know that mornings are unpredictable. Because what if today is the day that everything drops? So this vigilance isn't personality, it might be compensation. You might be the ADHD mum, sits up late at night with thoughts like, did I reply to the teacher? Did I order the uniform? Did I put petrol in the car? Your partner might be asleep, but your brain is still working. And motherhood multiplies this load. For a neurotypical mum, it might be tiring. For an ADHD mum, it exceeds capacity real quick. Monitoring is constant. The nervous system might really struggle to stand down ever. So if all the other mums are standing around the playground relaxing, air quoting, whatever that looks like, the ADHD mum might be tracking snack timing, emotional meltdown, sunscreen, who needs the toilet, what time they have to leave, whether she remembered to RSVP to the birthday party. A neurotypical mum might get home and might feel tired, but an ADHD mum gets home and can't stop moving, possibly, pacing, checking, replaying, because stopping means monitoring finally catches up with her body. If you're inattentive and you're more one of those people that sits couch bound, paralyzed, replaying, but you can't like get up and get started, it just means the toll is there, but it looks different. So for a neurotypical mum, the same day, the same tasks with different internal systems has a completely different cost. And this is where some of those comments really land differently. If you say to a neurotypical mum, you've managed this long though, it might land as reassurance, like you'll be right, you're okay, you're just having a bad day, you'll be all right. There might be no history of compensation debt attached to that sentence. But when you say to an ADHD mum, you've managed this long though, you'll be right, it lands as evidence that she shouldn't ask for help because her coping was never free. It always had a high toll. So for her, managing means constant monitoring, self-surveillance and over-functioning. So that sentence could translate to, if you've survived it, you don't need support. Maybe the ADHD mum is sitting in a GP office in leggings that she's worn for like 3 days. She might not have eaten since the cold coffee that she had at drop off hours ago. And she might be about to say finally out loud that she's drowning, but she might hear, but you've held down a job and raised the kids. I mean, I've known you for years. And what she hears isn't reassurance. It's don't make a fuss. You've gotten this far. Why do you need support now? So when this ADHD mum myth circulates, it really annoys me, to say the least. When I hear all mums feel like that, it's just mum life, it's social media. The ADHD system hears dismissal of chronic neurological strain, which is not okay. That is put as, air quoting, just motherhood, erases the difference between being tired and being constantly compensating. For someone trained to self-monitor and self-doubt, which is us, the ADHDers, this triggers withdrawal, minimization and silence. Maybe you've been at a barbecue when the kids have been running everywhere and someone says off cuff, I think we're all a bit ADHD now, aren't we? Maybe the ADHD mum laughs along while quietly deciding not to mention that she has an appointment next week for an assessment. So this isn't sensitivity, because these comments don't just communicate an opinion of that person that day. They might signal to an ADHD mum whether it's safe to keep going, whether to seek help or not. I don't want the message to ADHD mums to be, if I look capable, I don't get to struggle out loud. I don't get help. I don't deserve help. I wish that professionals knew that quiet compensation that reads as fine or looks like fine can sometimes mean that there is a massive hidden cost behind the scenes. And you might be seeing her at the point where the compensation has failed, where she has hit a point of no return in burnout. So from a media perspective, maybe the rising demand in ADHD medication looks like overuse. Apparently it does from the media. But from inside this, from the ADHD mum's perspective, what I believe it is delayed access. You don't see decades of overfunctioning self-surveillance and privately absorbed cost. that has kept us invisible until the load has finally exceeded capacity and we have collapsed. Maybe the professionals and the outsiders don't see the Christmases that went fine, don't see the problems that never became problems because someone else, us, simulated failure weeks earlier. Maybe in the school reports that say, a pleasure to have in the class, you don't see the color-coded diaries, the compensation systems, the years of white-knuckling monitoring. You don't see the anxiety, maybe the eating disorder, the burnout, it never made enough noise to inconvenience a teacher. So for someone who is trained in self-doubt, the ADHD mum, when a clinician is uncertain, that can really confirm the fear that she already walked in with, that visible competence disqualifies her from help or support or care. Because a lot of us sit in that assessment clinic and we are already wondering, should we have cancelled? We are mentally rehearsing how not to sound dramatic, already prepared to downplay what we came in to say. So I believe the media's portrayal of ADHD as some kind of trend doesn't protect clinical integrity at all. It prolongs harm and makes it okay, and it isn't. When a diagnosis finally happens in adulthood, and often it's clustered in late, often after kids, and it could even be mislabeled as a trend from their family, it's often delayed detection debt coming in. Years of missed identification doesn't disappear. It accumulates until the system is forced to reconcile them. So ADHD hasn't suddenly appeared, but vigilance has stopped being enough to protect us. The coping strategies that held through school, uni, work, early adulthood collapse under the parenting load. Not because we've changed, but because the margin that we have has disappeared. If you've lived this whole arc, it might make complete sense that you hesitate, that you downplay, that you overexplain, that you apologize, that you feel embarrassed for saying it out loud. When acceptance has been for a lot of us, silence feels safer than misjudgment. So the question is, how long did this system rely on women compensating before it ever to notice? Thank you so much for listening. This episode has followed a typical ADHD mum that I see throughout the podcast and the listener questions, and how this accumulates into why so many women and why so many mums are being diagnosed with ADHD. And it's not because we're suddenly seeing something on TikTok. It's because we are finally asking for help and putting our hand up that we need and deserve more support. And that's why this podcast exists. Please share this with a friend, review me on Spotify or Apple. Thank you so much for listening. Until next time.
Quick announcement. Did you know that we have an ADHD mum's shop filled with resources designed just for you? These resources are packed with answers to the most frequently asked questions I get sent in via email. Everything from understanding ADHD and autism to practical tips for daily life. There's also a free assessment tool. If you're wondering about ADHD or autism for yourself or your little one, don't forget to check out the free assessment tool under free resources section on my website, adhdmums.com.au.